Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City, friends. Yes, friends, here at NOLA Drinks, if you donate $35 to us, we will scroll your name below the show. Oh, wait, we'll do it for a dollar? Okay, if you donate $1 to us, we'll scroll your name below the show. Oh, it's radio, so nobody's going to see that. Oh, okay, never mind. Bad idea for a fundraiser. Yeah, friends, we've got a great show coming up for you today. Happy to be here. Yes, it is carnival time. We are in the middle of carnival, and here comes the first big weekend, friends, coming up. This is where things really start to roll. Yeah, last weekend, Crew de Vue, the weather cooperated. That was great. That was looking a little dodgy there, and the weather kind of coming up. I'm looking at the forecast for this weekend, bits of chances of rain. Really all the way through Fat Tuesday, not every day per se, and not huge amounts of rain forecast at least at this point. But hey, I'll say this, at least we're looking at, you know, mid-60s and even maybe in the low to mid-70s on Fat Tuesday itself. We know that can change because that's a ways out. But yeah, let's hope the weather, you know, it'd be nice to have kind of a warm one, right? With not rain and all that other stuff, at least a significant number of the days. Hopefully that's not too much to ask for. If you're interested in seeing some, pardon me, cool stuff. The Advocate in their Boku section has put out their annual insert for Mardi Gras that largely is put together by Arthur Hardy, who is the author, of course, of the famous Mardi Gras guide, which you can still get. That is an indispensable resource loaded with history and info and all that kind of stuff, schedules, things like that for Mardi Gras. But in the article, Arthur noted that the last time that Mardi Gras was on February 13th, which is what it is this year, was 1945. And that was actually canceled because, of course, World War II. And prior to that, it was 1935. And the weather that day was a high temperature of 67 degrees and no rain. I will take that, friends. I will take that. But yeah, lots of good parades coming up, you know, really kind of getting into full tilt here this weekend. You know, this is like where a lot of the ones, I mean, certainly there's ones uptown. O'Shun and Cleopatra are uptown tomorrow on Friday, if you're listening to the radio. Eve over in Mandeville, Excalibur in Metairie, whole host of stuff on Saturday. Pushmo up in Abita Springs, which is a really funny one. If you feel like taking a trip during the afternoon, that's at 11 o'clock. People, you know, out there with their lawnmowers and all kinds of weird stuff. It's Abita, but that's really a lot of fun. And we start to get, you know, like a lot of the parades on the North Shore, a lot of the parades in Jefferson Parish, T-Rex goes on in the Marigny, which is short for Petit Rex. That's on Saturday at 5 o'clock. That's a really funny parade. Pygmalion is uptown. That's kind of one of the big ones there. Chewbacca's, of course, in the Marigny and the Bywater on Saturday at 7 o'clock. Always a great laugh, you know, spoof on science fiction, all that good stuff. Sunday, we have Femme Fatale uptown, Carrollton, King Arthur, those are all uptown. Dionysus goes on in Slidell, all uptown, and Barkus, the crew of Barkus, which is always a good laugh, too. That's on Sunday as well. And then Wednesday, before we air the next show, of course, Wednesday, February 7th, we get Druids uptown and Nyx uptown. Those are also, and that's when we start to get into the heavy hitters, of course, moving into next week. But yeah, if you check out that guide that I mentioned in The Advocate that Arthur puts together, it's really cool because it's got all the routes from all the different parades, all the times, gives you the rundown of everything that you need to know. So some pretty good stuff there. Friends, a little bit of news. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on the show coming up first here. We're going to interview our good friend, one of my good friends, one of my first friends here in New Orleans, actually, when I moved here a while back, Mark Stone, who is a fine musician, kind of categorized often as a blues man, but he brings in all kinds of elements to music. And Mark is doing a residency at the Little Gem Saloon, which is at the corner of Rampart and Poydras. And it's a great music venue. Our friend, mutual friend between Mark and myself, Nick Bazan and the Bazan family opened that place up just a handful of years ago, restaurant, bar, but a great music venue, great music programming going on there. And Mark is doing a whole run of shows. If you're listening on the radio, it's going on through Saturday, this Saturday. It actually started a couple nights ago on Tuesday. We interviewed Mark on Monday, talking about all the, he's got different lineups every night, playing with all kinds of fantastic people. Talk about Mark's music background. He played with people like Eddie Bow when he first got here. That's a great story. He tells it. So some really cool stuff like that going on that way. And I encourage you to go check out Mark. He's about my age. Mark's in his late 40s. And he got here about 25 years ago. started playing on the scene, started playing on the street. This kind of stuff, I mean, if you don't know this stuff, what goes on the street here with music, there's a thing that happens. People come, they play on the street, they try and make their way. I know a lot of people in the quarter and other places are irked by the street musicians. But there's sort of a, I don't even know how to say, sort of a system that goes on. And some of these kids that come to play on the street, and then it takes somebody that's maybe playing in one of the clubs, takes them under their wing, puts them in their band, gives them an opportunity, and then that's how they kind of climb the ladder. And there's a lot of people that can tell that same story. There's a lot of people that are playing on Frenchman Street and gone on to bigger things that started just playing on Royal Street on the weekends or really anywhere. And Mark is one of those guys who, you know, came down here from New York where he's from, with his guitar, started playing on the street and had, you know, people liked what he heard, including Eddie Bo. And you got to hear that story, but took him under his wing and put him in his band. And then later on, you know, Mark played with Rockin' Doopsie, played a little bit with Alan Toussaint here and there. He's playing with John Mooney these days, some things like that. And he's got the Mark Stone band. So it's a really cool story because where I'm going with this is that how the age, Mark's age, he bridges a gap of a lot of the original New Orleans musicians that were the pioneers of the blues and the R&B music from the 50s, for example, 60s that we had here. That's a touchstone for so much American music. And, you know, Mark touch those guys, and then Mark is kind of giving it back. He's playing with some of the people he's showcasing are some younger artists. He firmly understands his spot in the tapestry and the landscape of New Orleans music, so that's really, really cool. Then also, we move on from our interview with Mark, and we'll be back to talk about this too, but we covered the Speed Rack event, which I talked about before, all-female bartending competition that was there to raise money for breast cancer awareness. That took place on Monday at Howlin' Wolf. It's the Southern Regional. It's the seventh season that they've been doing this. So we interview Ivy Mix, great name for a bartender, and Lynette Marrero, who are the two women who organized the event, have for the past 7 years. First time they've come down to New Orleans. It's a really cool competition, how it works. There are a preliminary round. We had a great showing from Team New Orleans. I'm super proud of all the fantastic women. Many, many, pretty much all of them are friends of mine. And it's a speed competition. You get given kind of a list of drinks that you're told right at the beginning when you step up to the bar and on the stage there. You get a few minutes to figure out your well, what you're going to do, and then it's a time competition to not only make the drink, but make the drink right, present it well, and then they're judged. And each level, they did some preliminaries, then we got down to the final eight, and then it becomes a head-to-head thing with the final eight, and then we moved on to the finals. In the finals, New Orleans' own Anna Giordano, a very good friend of mine, who amazingly was her first speed rack, and she really has only been tending bars. She works at Bar Tonique on North Rampart Street for about 2 years, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And she went up against a nice young woman called Madeline Fay, who is from Austin, who has participated in several speed racks and has done really well. It was one of my favorite moments of the competition. I had the chance and the privilege to interview both of them right after the competition closed. And you should have seen when we were talking about their backgrounds, and Anna said, oh, it's my first speed rack and I've only been bartending for a short amount of time. You should have seen the look on Madeline's face. It was priceless. Huge amount of respect from Madeline for Anna as well. And so Team NOLA did great. Out of the final eight, four of them were from New Orleans in the Southern region. So really cool stuff. But we talk with the organizers, as I said, Ivy and Lynette. And then we also, as I just mentioned, we chat with Madeline and Anna. And we'll be back to talk about something after the interview with Mark. We'll talk about a few things. Then we'll have those interviews from Speed Rack. And then we'll talk a little bit about some beverage news here and there. And we'll talk a little bit about, well, what's that other thing going on this weekend besides Mardi Gras? Oh, yeah. The Super Bowl. So we'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. Man, I am not excited. Well, okay, it's always fun to kind of watch, but the Patriots versus the Eagles, jeez. Anyway, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drinks Show. When we come back, we're going to chat with Mark Stone, my good buddy, fine musician, about some stories that he's got, as I said, and some other cool things, and how you can check him out at the Little Gem Saloon tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. So come on back.
Oyster rake scraping down Grand Isle Way. Don't get no more salty than Barataria Bay. 100 years.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
They're getting digitized, living life on the screen.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning into the show, as always. And a little treat here. We're doing our Soul Skillet segment and sitting here in the home of my good friend, musician, blues man, Mark Stone. Mark, buddy, how are you, man?
Good. Good to see you, Brian.
It's good to see you, too, man. Last time we did anything like this, this was going way back. You do Tuesday gig, Soul Serenade, 2 to 4 o'clock on WWOZ, and you had me in there one time.
I did. I think that was right when you were launching this show.
It might have been. Actually, you know what? It was probably something connected to Pontchartrain Vineyards, perhaps. But, so the tables are turned here, buddy. I'm interviewing you.
I know. I know.
So cool, man. Mark, so you've been here, man. You moved from New York. How long have you been? About 25 years now?
25 years, 1993, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And I mean, so you've been playing music the whole time that you've been here. And it's
day
been
one. Yeah.
Day one. And it's been, you and I have known each other for coming up on about 10 years now.
Yep.
And it's been fun to watch your career develop, because it certainly has.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a really, really fun adventure. You know, I've been fortunate to work with a lot of great Louisiana music artists and great New Orleans artists, and over the years developing my own stuff as well. And to see it finally, the last 4 or 5 years, take off and be able to be my main focus has been wonderful.
That's cool. And I saw something you posted the other day. You're talking about playing with certain New Orleans luminaries. There was something, I think you put it on Facebook, where it was a picture of you and Eddie Bowe.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the greatest education you could ever hope to get that you could never buy. Eddie Bowe used to play at Margaritaville.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Margaritaville there now, which is a BB King's on Decatur.
Yeah, Eddie Bowe used to play in what was the front room at Margaritaville. And I used to play on the street at that time. This is in the mid-1990s, and I was in my earlier mid-20s. And I would stop. I didn't know who he was. I wasn't hip to his history. And I was recently arrived in New Orleans and didn't get the respect deserved at that time. So I just used to stand awestruck and watch him through the window, just him and a drummer. It was either Bobby Williams or Bobby Wilson, both of whom have passed on. And I used to just stand there and watch with my, you know, guitar over my shoulder and a bag. And I was this hippie kid in the window. I wasn't going in there to, you know, what money I was making on the street, I wasn't spending there. Until Bo finally said, "Hey, kid, come in here." And he said, "You going to play with me?" I said, "Well, I have an acoustic guitar." And he said, "Can we put a mic on it?" And those guys played loud.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
I say, remember, this is one of the originators of rock and roll. The man who wrote Slippin' and Slidin', that of course became an iconic hit for Little Richard. And so I'm like, there's no way that'll work. He said, "Well, do you have an amp?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Bring it tomorrow." And he had Jesse Hill standing next to him. And he said, "All right, who's going to come see this kid play with me tomorrow?" And that was the beginning of a 3-year stint as an apprentice and then full member in his band, and did lots of great stuff with Bo. But the education I got from him, just throwing me in the water, he never told me anything. He just played and I had to follow.
That's cool. You know, you told me that I really like, because you know, we were talking about you playing with Eddie Bowe, and then you played with Rockin' Doopsie for a number of years.
Which was very similar with Rockin' Doopsie Jr., who actually the very first time I ever played with Doopsie was on an Eddie Bowe gig. And then years later, Patrick Williams, the great harmonica player, who was in for many years, recommended me to Doopsie. They all came to a gig I had, and Doopsie hired me, and I was in and out of his band for about 5 years. And what I learned from Eddie Bowe, which is so critical if you're playing with real old school New Orleans and Louisiana artists, is all the information you're going to get is going to come through your ears and maybe your peripheral vision, but there's not going to be a lot of discussion. There's not going to be rehearsals. There's not going to be set lists. And
you come in knowing this stuff, right? You're expected to know, here's the canon, here's the song list that you're supposed to know, and you're supposed to know.
Even that, to have ears and know how to use them.
And, you know, and as you go, by the seat of your pants, okay.
Yeah, and it was similar with Doopsie, and both of them were such energetic and engaging performers, and both of them used the band as an instrument to communicate with the crowd. So as a member of that band, you have to be completely tuned in to wherever they may wind up going, and you have to be ready to go there with them, because they're not worried about whether or not the band is going to come along. You know, if they don't think you can do that, you're not going to be receiving payment from those
guys. You're not going to be in. One of my favorite stories you told me, Mark, a number of years ago when you were playing with Doopsie, I think it was when you first started, and you're talking about something where you're supposed to do the rhythm guitar line, and it was the dude who played the washboard, and he scratched it out on the washboard for
that
you.
Was with CJ.
Here's your part. Oh, it was CJ. Oh,
that was Chenier. With CJ Chenier's band, was my first touring band and my first Attico band that I was with. Yeah, same thing. I mean, all the communication I got was maybe the first two nights the bass player might call a key to me. And other than that, the washboard player would come up. That's the great Clifford Alexander, better known as Humpy. He would come up and scratch out a rhythm part and say, pick that up. And once I had that rhythm, he'd go back to his part and go back to his spot on the stage.
That's pretty cool, man. Yeah. So now we're talking, dropped some good names there. You had a great experience, a great education, as you said, coming up in the way. And then now we find you today where you have the Mark Stone Band, and you've got a couple new records out, right? You have a live record out.
Yeah, I have the live record Live in Europe, which I'm really honored was nominated Best Blues Album for the Offbeat Best of the Beat Awards this year. And I did that with my longtime touring partner in Europe, Christoph Weibel, who's a great Austrian boogie-woogie and blues piano player who's played with a lot of great New Orleans touring artists that go over there, and he and I have been working together since I got stuck in Europe when Katrina hit, and I brought over my drummer Terry Scott Jr., and that was his first tour out of the U.S. ever. He's from Houma, and he's actually from a little town called Gibson outside of Houma.
Okay,
and he had never had a passport, never seen a mountain, and so I'm like, "Hey, Terry, that's the Swiss Alps. What do you think?" he's a phenomenal drummer. He's been playing with Dr. John a lot recently, and just turned 30 and tearing up the world playing with everyone. But it was really great. And then the bass player is our friend Lorenzo Wilson, also known as Mookie, from Brooklyn, New York, who lives in Zurich and was a founding member of the band The Crown Heights Affair in New York in the 70s. Super funky, old school bass player. So we had a lot of fun touring as that four-piece band. And we made the live record, and it's got a really good response. And we didn't do an official platform release last year. We kept it really low-key indie. We did the video for Digitized with Alvin Youngblood Hart and Papa Molly and Marilyn Barberin and Mike Dillon, and that's up on YouTube. But we will do a official platform release. We were talking to a couple of labels actually about having that picked up for distribution.
Great. So. That's exciting, man.
Yeah.
And so, and you're playing, well, let's do this, Mark. We got a couple minutes left. Let's talk a little bit more about, so you're considered a blues player. I mean, and so you were nominated Best of the Beat for Best Blues Album as well as Best Blues Guitarist in New Orleans,
Best Blues
right?
Performer, yeah.
Blues Performer.
Which is, when I consider the talent in this town, I just have to chuckle, yeah.
That's an amazing honor, man. And I was remember, I mean, and I voted for you, man. But
thank you.
Absolutely. But the list of people, and I'm drawing a blank on exactly, but you were
Samantha
great company.
Samantha Fish won both, and she's just extraordinary.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, you know, I am Walter Wolfman Washington and Johnny Sansone and so many people that I've looked up to for so many years who I've gotten to play with, and a lot of whom I've gotten to do these special shows that we're doing, like the stuff we'll be doing at Little Jam all week. So to get mentioned in the same company with those guys is so flattering and so life-affirming. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, that's great, man. And we were talking about how your career has come such a long way in that amount of time, and to be kept in that company, that's got to be a great honor. It's really impressive, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I'm really glad that even though what I do certainly with my original music doesn't fit neatly into any category, that, you know, my first musical love is the blues, and I've always wanted to make sure that no matter what I was playing, that that spirit was present in whatever I was doing. And I never wanted to rewrite the blues. I didn't want to be someone, you know, just cranking out my own variations of the standard formulas. Mm-hmm. You know, I write my own music with its own structures and its own melodies, and it's a, you know, much more of a pop or rock or, you know, roots rock or whatever you
funk,
want to call
R&B
it
thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It draws from all that.
Let's do this, Mark. Let's see, because that's where I wanted to go with this, is that you get categorized in say, like in this competition, or excuse me, the awards for Best of the Beat Awards with Opie Magazine as a blues musician, but you went exactly where I wanted to go, is that that's not really a fair way to categorize you. Well, let's take a break here, man. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about your music, talk a little bit about the Ruffin Yak cocktail, strangely, and we're going to talk about your residency at the Little Gem Saloon coming up. It's actually happening as we speak, so check that out.
Thank you, Brian.
Absolutely, buddy. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey. The way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. Yep, we're chatting with my good Mark Stone, a musician here in New Orleans, Mark Stone Band. And we went and took the break. We're talking about how you bring in a lot of different elements into your music. So there's a lot of, you know, funk, R&B. There's seriously a New Orleans vibe. There's rock. There's roots rock, as you said. And I know you do a stint DJing, as we just talked about, on WWOZ. And on your show, you've availed yourself of all kinds of different styles and immersed yourself in all kinds of different styles. And I see that comes out in your music, man.
Well, I appreciate that, Brian. Yeah, you know, I mean, if you love American music in all its forms, and the blues is at the root of all of it, that's the basic language for all American music. But, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s listening to every type of rock and roll and R&B and funk and jazz and folk. And then, of course, I moved down here in 93 and got exposed to, you know, Creole music and Cajun music. You know, Zydeco and Cajun music from Southwest Louisiana. And didn't realize how influenced I'd been by New Orleans music growing up, because one of my first great heroes was Fats Domino.
Right, right.
And so since I had that stuff so ingrained in my head, it definitely made it easier when I started playing with a lot of the old school New Orleans R&B people like Eddie Bowe and Ernie Cato and Tommy Ridgely, and got to play with Alan Toussaint a little bit. So I was lucky to have that musical background.
That's cool, man. It's. I think you made a really good point here, Mark, where people don't realize, if you're outside of the New Orleans area or not familiar with the music here, the influence that music from here has on everything that you hear, just as you said. And there are so many people you listen to, a lot of, say, the R&B stuff from the 50s out of New Orleans, and maybe you don't know the artist, maybe you haven't heard of the artist, but the sheer volume of wonderful music that's come this place is just, it's incomparable.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, getting to play on the scene for so long here in New Orleans, and, you know, I started as a rugrat. I mean, I was a kid. I was 23 years old when I got here, and I was always the young buck in the band with all these older, you know, great originators of rock and roll and New Orleans R&B, and people who, you know, C.J. Chenier and Rockin' Doopsy Jr., both of whom, their fathers are the, you know, architects of Zydeco as we know it. So getting to work with all those guys, and then also working with a lot of original artists and working with younger people who are involved in the scene. And now that I'm kind of in the middle, getting to work with someone like Michaela Brown, who'll be doing a duo with me as part of my residency at Little Gem this week on Wednesday. She's an absolutely brilliant vocalist and a very accomplished pianist, as well as a string instrument player and an exceptional writer. And she's bringing so many incredible ideas to the table when she writes, and getting to dig into her music, you know, and at the same time working with someone like Charlie Miller, who will be doing a duo with me on Wednesday, who many people might know for being the trumpet player in Dr. John's band for years and years. He came up, started playing professionally when he was 14. He's been friends with Dr. John since, you know, Mac Rebinac, since they were about 10 years old. And he has this wealth of knowledge. So to get to be in a fulcrum point, you know, and we're going to have another great young artist, Bianca Love, who's an exceptional singer, who grew up partly in India and partly in New Orleans, and has this incredible bluesy voice. She'll be guesting with the Soul Finders this week, and getting people like John Mooney, who is the direct link to everything we love about the Delta Blues. You know, the last great protege of Sun House, along with Muddy Waters and Robert Johnson. You know, he's the last step in that lineage. It's really, really wonderful. Yeah, you know, working with someone like Cole Williams from Brooklyn, who was in the Pimps of Joy time for a long time and has a very original style. I've been very lucky to get to explore all these different musical vibrations and styles that all have something of a common root.
And you're showcasing a lot of this, Mark, at the residency that you're doing at Little Gem. And for folks listening, if you're hearing this on the radio, we recorded this on Monday, so you're hearing this on Thursday. So we're in the middle of Mark's residency that's going to run through Saturday. If you're hearing the podcast, you still have a chance to catch that. So Thursday night, tonight, here on the radio, after the radio show,
Who do you got going on? I'll have the great Charlie Miller with me.
Yeah.
We were just talking about. And then Friday night, something that grew out of working in Eddie Bowe's band was, anyone who saw Bowe in the 90s knows that he didn't play a lot of his classic funk repertoire that he did with his band the Soul Finders in the late 60s and early 70s.
Why was that, Mark? You've told me that before. Just kind of wanted to do something different, you think? Or
I think he did what he thought was going to get audience and tips, which was playing,
gotcha,
you know, a lot of well-known Memphis R&B type stuff, Stax Records kind of stuff, as well as some of his own classic stuff. But I think a lot of those great funk records, he went in the studio one day, he made a track, he sent it off to get it mastered and distributed and never thought about it again. You know, the man made so many records. He was constantly in the studio creating, and along with James Black and Ed Frank and George Davis and people like that, he created all these amazing tracks, and the great Paul Boudreaux, the bass player, and Marilyn Barberin was one of his singers at the time, and I've always been a fan of Marilyn's. She used to be married to the late, great Wilbert Junkyard Dog Arnold, who was the drummer with Walter Wolfman Washington, the Roadmasters, for the first 20-odd years of their career. And so I ran into Marilyn at one of Walter's shows, and I said, hey, I have this Louisiana Blues Throwdown gig coming up. I'd be honored to have you on it. And we had played together maybe 10 years prior. And she said, sure. And at the same time, I was working with Paul Boudreaux on some gigs. And I said, hey, man, let's do a tribute to the Soul Finders stuff you guys did with Eddie Bo. And out of that, the new Soul Finders were formed, focusing on that Eddie Bo funk stuff and then reaching out from there. Now, Paul is for good reason, heavily overcommitted already, so he wasn't able to stay with the band. And I was almost ready to wrap it up when Reggie Scanlon from the Radiators said, hey man, if you're doing that Eddie Bo thing, I'd love to be involved.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
So we put the band back together with Reggie, and Papa Molly has guested on pretty much every gig we've done, so he's kind of an unofficial sixth member of the band, and getting a guitar with him is an epic experience.
He's a great guy. Huh? I like him a lot.
Yeah, I call him the psychedelic soul shaman, because he's so deep, and you know, he can be so rooted and then take it so far into outer space, and it's all so deep and so real. And getting to play two guitars with a cat like that is exceptional. And then we had Leo Nocentelli come and play on a gig, which was amazing. Congrats to the Meters.
The Meters, yeah. There you go.
That's right. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Lifetime Achievement Award winners.
About time, huh?
Yeah,
I mean, talk about a travesty of rock and roll justice for a long time at the Meters not getting the recognition from. I box on this all the time on the show, Mark, because we spend some Meters going in and out of breaks. And there's just it's about time. I'm going to leave it at that. Yeah.
So we'll have the new Soul Finders with Marilyn Barberin and Reggie Scanlon and Papa Molly and Bianca Love. And Terry Scott and Mike Burkhart and myself on Friday at the Little Gem. That's an 8 p.m. show, 7 o'clock doors. And the next night, to really bring it back to the blues, we're going to have a tribute to Robert Johnson, Muddy Waters, and Son House, which are the great Delta triumvirate. And as I said, John Mooney is the last person to be directly linked to that thread through his association with Son House when he was young. So John Mooney and the great Bruce Sunpie Barnes, leader of Louisiana Sunspots, as well as a member for several years up until recently of Paul Simon's band and worked with Sting and anybody else, a great blues man and multi-instrumentalist. We're going to do a tribute.
He's also a great, sorry, Mark, he's a great multicultural guy in that. I mean, his connection to food and the stuff that he does, I know he goes out in the bayou and forages and all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, he's a renaissance man.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, you know, a U.S. Park Service Ranger and a true high-level student of all kind of Afro-Franco culture from around the world, and one of the great practitioners of all these different styles.
Let's do this, Mark, because we're going to do two segments, but let's do one more. You got time to stick around?
Be a pleasure.
House. You got time to stick around in your
We're not running us out yet.
Right on.
So I'll talk to the landlord.
So we're going to come back and talk with Mark a little bit more about the gigs at the Little Gem Saloon. It's a historic spot in New Orleans. It has a great place in music history, that neighborhood, and also has, we're going to bring in a little cocktail angle because, you know, this is a show about food and drink, so
of course we
got to bring that in, and so we'll do that. So we're going to take a little break here on the show, friends. We are chatting with Mark Stone of the Mark Stone Band. Check him out, the Little Gem Saloon, tonight through Saturday, and we're going to run down those a little bit more and talk a little bit more with Mark. So hey, come on back. Got a full bucket, a good bucket, a son of bucket. A whole bucket. Tell me. Is your bucket got a hole in it? Got a hole in it. It's got a hole in it. Is your bucket got a hole in it, fellas? Let me tell you how you can see. When your kisses fail a mover and your rap don't seem to
not the best thing I ever had. But good as you are, good baby, Lord, you're better when you're bad. Oh baby, when you're bad, I made bad decisions, bad ideas.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here at WGSO 9 a.m. in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. As always, friends, thanks for tuning into the show. And as we do from time, here in New Orleans, as I like to say, we are a cultural tapestry. So food and drink and music and all kinds of other stuff that goes on around here, you can't just pull one thread out of the tapestry. It's all tied in together.
Especially at this time of year.
Especially at this time of year, right in the heart of Carnival. And we're chatting with my good friend Mark Stone, who is a fine, fine musician here in town. And we talked a little bit about his background, a little bit about his style of music, and these great gigs that you're doing at the Little Gem Saloon, Mark. It's a cool spot. So our friend Nick Bazan opened up Little Gem Saloon on the corner of Rampart and Poydras, and that neighborhood right there means a hell of a lot to music.
That area is called Back of Town, yeah. And that block is called the Ramp, where it was back in the old days. And the four original buildings in that block on the lake side of the street there are the last four original jazz hall structures standing in New Orleans and thereby in the world. And the Whittle's the only one that's in operation. And Nick and his family put so much effort. The Bazan family put so much effort into rehabilitating that building to create this really cool facility with a full production stages, both upstairs and downstairs, and an awesome kitchen, outstanding cocktail program. Shout out to Brianne Trosclair back there. and you know, they serve the Rofignac, which is their signature cocktail, which apparently was invented at Maley's Restaurant, which stood right in that area for many, many years. And you can tell about
it's a funny cocktail. I shouldn't say it's funny. It's a classic cocktail, and it's almost a lost cocktail in that. So it's generally rye or brandy, cognac, really, and raspberry syrup topped with soda. And it's one where it really kind of almost disappeared, and it didn't maintain that level of the hollowed ground that, say, a Sazerac had, for example. And so it's turned up on certain recipes, and very few people even actually do it. So that's cool that Nick and Little Jim are keeping that drink alive.
They did so much research about the musical history and the cultural history and the culinary history in that area when they opened. It was really incredible, because I was involved with them. I helped curate their first jazz fest line, yeah, right, and worked with them as their entertainment director for a while. And Nick was constantly sending me articles on the history of the block. And of course, you have a very interesting, as you had in a lot of American cities and lower income areas, you had this great intersection of Black American culture and Jewish culture in these areas. And then the Bazans are actually from Argentina. Nick and Maria, his sister who runs the club with him, they were both born in Argentina, and they bring some of that sensibility with them. But they've grown up in New Orleans, and, you know, lovers of real New Orleans cooking. And their father, Dr. Nicholas Bazan from LSU, also produces an outstanding Pinot Noir that he bottles and labels his own name. Oft known to request a glass of the family grape.
I usually know when Nick comes by and he drops a glass of wine on the table and says, "Here, try this." I'm going to go, "I think I have, because I think I know what it is."
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, Nick has such a long history working in restaurants here. I mean, he's been working in restaurants for 20-odd years, including, you know, a long stint at Galatoire's, and he, of course, owned and operated Rio Mar for many years. So they bring a lot to the table, especially in terms of their drink program. It's really exceptional. Their food's great, and the vibe is wonderful. We've put on so many special shows there over the years, and I've really had a chance, particularly at that venue, to explore all the different musical avenues that I love. And, you know, just like how I like to envision the music I do, the place has very strong roots. But, you know, there's so much room to branch out in every direction. And I'm really excited for this residency, because I am going to get to branch out in so many directions and enjoy playing with so many different kinds of artists in a short space of time.
That's really cool, Mark, because you're doing, as you mentioned, it's a great mix of musicians that you're bringing in. And you're going to showcase things in different ways, right? So we're talking about the blues stuff on Saturday that you're doing. It's giving you a chance to kind of show off your range as a musician, with surrounding yourself with all kinds of great people.
Sure. You know, I mean, we're doing, over the course of the week, you know, brand new original music, and I have a new EP that I put up online only called Songs on iPhone, because I love the sound of my iPhone demos that I make in the middle of the night when I'm trying to stay quiet and not piss off the neighbors and all that. Right. But there was an immediacy to that, and I had a batch of new tunes. I've been writing a lot, and it's been a couple of years since my last studio album. So I wanted to release all these tunes in their most naked form, where there was really no chance to even think about anything. It's just play it,
lay it down, and
if it sounds good, out it goes. So we're going to be featuring a lot of those tunes, and then with Michaela Brown, who I guess will have been last night by the time this airs on Wednesday night. She's such a creative writer, and the great Tom McDermott, who has such an incredibly broad palette under his hands.
What a great piano player.
A true musical genius, and someone who drinks from every edge of the well. And so, you know, between doing brand new original stuff of my own and other artists and doing, you know, the deepest blues you can imagine with Mooney and Sun Pie doing the Robert Johnson Sunhouse, Muddy Waters canon, and then diving into the deepest parts of the New Orleans funk pool with the New Orleans Soul Finders with Marilyn Barber and Reggie Scanlon, celebrating not only the Eddie Bo funk legacy, but it's Mardi Gras, so we're going to hit on lots of great New Orleans funk stuff.
Yeah, cool. That's going to be fun, man. And actually, last time we saw you play, because we were talking about Little Gem and what a beautiful room it is, and you were meant to do, so when Dead & Company came to town, I talked about this, people have heard this on the show, Dead & Company, the Grateful Dead kind of offshoot band, if you will, and John Mayer is playing with them, had to have his appendix out, so the concert got postponed, and you guys were supposed to do the after show at Little Gem, which then got moved up to a great time. It was 8 o'clock, yeah. So you did like the regular show, and you filled in the slot. That show was wild, man. That was fun. It was a great
so
room,
so much
man.
Fun, yeah. Yeah. The vibe was so high in there, and to have all those music-hungry, music-loving Deadheads with their, and they were so gracious and grateful to know that even though the show was postponed, that they still had live music, and I had the great Dave Easley on pedal steel, and yeah. Sam Price of Sam Price and the True Believers and Honey Island Swamp Band and Otra, and congrats to Sam on all his success this year.
He's doing well with his record.
Won best I think it was best roots rock album for Sam's album, and Sam and I've been playing till 25 years I've been living here, so we did a lot of our own stuff as well as bringing in a lot of the Dead stuff and Dead related stuff, and the reaction and the warmth from the crowd was so wonderful. We'll be doing that again actually as an after show when the Dead come to town for the reschedule on February 24th.
Yeah.
And the night before we'll be at 3090 on Frenchman Street.
Oh, cool.
Playing for all the Deadheads.
Yeah.
And another really cool new project that I'm excited about that we're doing on February 11th at House of Blues, right at the height of Mardi Gras, Anders Osborne will be doing his All-Star Spectacular that night. And upstairs in the Foundation Room as the pre-party, I put together a new trio with my dear friend West Bank Mike Dusan, who I used to play with years ago, and the amazing Mishia Lake. And
oh, wow, cool.
I love working with Mishia. I mean, anyone who knows her knows she's such an extraordinary singer, but if you've gotten a chance to know her and work with her, you also know she's just one of the coolest, most down-to-earth, for real, there with it, on the ball people. And she always, in the most gentle and gracious way, pushes things so much higher. So Mishia and West Bank Mike and myself are just going to sit around with some guitars. We're going to get together and you know, introduce ourselves to each other's material and do that at the Foundation Room at House of Blues.
That's
on February
Sunday, February 11th.
Sunday, February 11th. Awesome. At 10 p.m. 8 p.m.
8 p.m. Cool. And Mark, so we got about a minute left. Tell people where they can connect with your music online, Facebook, website, all that good stuff.
You can download all my music at bandcamp.com, including the Live in Europe CD that we were talking about and the new Songs on iPhone EP, as well as my previous catalog, Trickeration and Rascality and Poison and Medicine. And you can check out more about my music at markstonemusic.com. That's Mark with a C. And I hope everyone will check out the video for our song Digitized with Alvin Youngblood, Heart, Papa Molly, Mike Dillon, and Marilyn Barber. And that's up on YouTube.
On YouTube, cool. And always can catch you on WWOZ 2 to 4 on Tuesdays with the Soul Serenade, man. You spin some great discs on that show, buddy.
Well, thank you, Brian. And absolutely. I have some great guests, too.
Yo, man. All right, I'll come back on. Is that what you're saying? Or you're saying stay away?
No. Come on back.
Don't drag it down.
No. Hey. Come on. Great knowledge of drink and the art and joy behind it is always welcome.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Friends, Mark Stone, go check him out at the Little Gem Saloon tonight through Saturday. Always playing around town, so check it out online and catch a show on OZ. Make sure you see this fine man playing some fine music. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back.
looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails, Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour number two here of the show. Thanks for listening in. Happy Carnival, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the interview there in the first part of the show with my good friend Mark Stone, fine musician here in town, fine man here in town. Always interesting to talk with him about music and his experiences and some of those really neat stories. I'm sure we'll have Mark on again in the near future. And as I did mention at the close of the interview, you can always hear Mark. He does the Soul Serenade Show, which he spins some really fine discs there from 2 to 4 p.m. every Tuesday on WWOZ 90.7. And if you're not in the New Orleans area, never fear. Just like in the podcast world, well, in this case, you can actually stream WWOZ online. Go to WWOZ.org and stream it anywhere in the world. That, to me, is a cultural gem, that radio station, playing all kinds of New Orleans music and other forms of music, but with a heavy emphasis on New Orleans music, jazz, R&B, all kinds of things. And one of the things that I know, all kinds of stories, when people left and evacuated for Katrina or were displaced by Katrina, one of the things that kept them feeling connected was being able to listen to WWOZ online. I listen to it almost every day. It's always on in the car, and it's just a great, great way to feel New Orleans. So there you go. Friends, a little bit of beverage news here. There's some rumblings going on about the 2015 Burgundy Harvest, the Red Burgundy Harvest. So of course, we're talking about Pinot Noir. And this is in a wine enthusiast. And we start to kind of see, you know, when we're 2-3 years removed from a vintage, especially with old world wines and French wines, we start to kind of really get a feel for the vintage and the quality of the vintage. And according to wine enthusiasts, some rumblings that this may be the finest vintage thus far in the early part, this still fairly young century. There have been some other really good ones, 2002, 2005, and 2010. But now there's this talk that 2015 is showing tremendously well. All that stuff that we look for in Pinot, the ripe fleshy note, the perfumey character, but, you know, some firm tannins. Good Pinot always has to have a pretty good amount of acidity to it as well to give it that backbone. It's a difficult wine to make. It's a very fickle wine to grow. So striking that balance of the tannins, of the acidity, of the aromatics on the wine, making sure it's not overripe, underripe, all that stuff. It's a really tough one. And so all this talk about it maybe being one of the best ones coming out. Now, here's the problem is the yields weren't that big in 2015, as many have been. Basically, really since 2011 or so, we've had pretty low yields in the vineyards in Burgundy. And so the wines are pretty hard to find. They give some recommended bottlings, and you can check it out on winemag.com if you're interested. But the vast majority of them are going for well over $100 in their recommended recommendations. And some of these are just, you just can't even find them. But yeah, so, you know, if you do come across even some of the regular, just red Burgundy that you're finding out there from 2015, some of the lesser expensive bottles, those are even pretty good from all accounts. A few that I've tasted have been pretty good. So it's interesting. They're talking about these wines, some of these better ones being age worthy for 10, 15, 20 years. So if you see them, snatch them up. I guess that's probably the advice. You know, here's a little bit of news that's coming out of New Hampshire, the Granite State. They are, once again, I guess they've done this a few times in the recent past or not too distant past, considering lowering the drinking age. The latest proposal is to lower the drinking age to from 21 to 20, but only in private settings. So 20-year-olds couldn't buy it and they can't consume it in public. They not too long ago, there was an effort to lower the drinking age to 19 for active duty service members or allow those 18 and over to drink when accompanied by adults. Both those efforts failed. They're kind of speculating that this will probably fail too, but it brings up the point. And this article, this is reported in alternet.org if you want to check that out. You know, the United States is really pretty much out of step with the rest of the world, as this article says. More than 100 countries, the legal drinking age is 18 or 19. There are only 11 other countries besides this one. Those 11 are 21. Those would be Cote d'Ivoire, Equatorial Guinea, Iraq, Kiribati, Micronesia, Mongolia, Nauru, Oman, Palau, Samoa, and Sri Lanka. Several of those are Pacific Island states. Those are all at 21, as I said. For example, Canada is 18 or 19, depends on the province. Mexico is 18. Most European countries are 18, or many are even lower than that. And actually, interestingly enough, more countries have a legal drinking age lower than 18 than the number of countries that have a legal drinking age of 21. Portugal allows drinking of anything at 16. In Germany, you can drink beer at 16. And in Switzerland, 16-year-olds can drink beer and wine. Now, here in the States, and a lot of us probably know this, is that technically the legal drinking age is up to the states. So, you know, and all kinds of people right after Prohibition changed the drinking age. A lot of people, when they reestablished drinking, it was 18 or 19. But then what happened in 1984 is Congress passed the National Minimum Drinking Age Act. Now, this did not set the minimum drinking age, but what it did is it told states if they did not raise the drinking age to 21, they would lose their federal highway funds, which is a huge amount of money for every state. So by 1988, every state in the country had gone up to the drinking age of 21. And as a matter of fact, that was the year I graduated from high school. So many of the graduating classes the year before me went to Hawaii for their high school graduation trip because you could drink, you know, at 18 in Hawaii. Where did I go? I went to Mexico because I couldn't go anywhere else. But one of the main arguments, there are several to, you know, why the drinking age is at 21. The main one is limiting traffic fatalities and accidents. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has estimated that a drinking age of 21 decreased the number of fatal traffic accidents for 18 to 20-year-olds by 13%. But a lot of people that are proponents of lowering the drinking age point out that the data is not quite as clear-cut. Many countries with a drinking age of 18 have fewer drunk driving accidents and fatalities than the U.S. And during the 1980s, as 21 was becoming the law across the land here, the rate of traffic accidents and fatalities in the U.S. decreased less than that of European countries whose legal drinking age is lower than 21. So, you know, maybe it's obviously a different country or set of countries that we're talking about here, but an issue. Some of the arguments, of course, also about their health arguments. But some of the arguments about lowering the drinking age is consistency. 18 is the age for legal adulthood. You can be drafted. You can sign contracts. You can get married. You can vote. You can join the armed forces. You're drafted, but you can also join voluntarily, of course, because we don't have a draft right now. But you can't have a beer. Then that's sort of the consistency argument. There's a liberty argument that drinking alcohol is an enjoyable activity. Adults under 21 should not be denied that enjoyment when other pleasurable activities, you know what some of those are legal at age 18. That argument still continues to be out there. Now, I think one of the things that we know here in the New Orleans area, and it's become a little bit more difficult, but it's, you know, pretty common that even when you go out to a restaurant, if you're with your parents, that you know, when you're a teenager, that kind of age up there, high school graduation, get a glass of champagne, that sort of thing. And certainly the in-home consumption, I think we know it's kind of part of the tradition around here. I grew up in a situation where, you know, holiday meals and these things as a teenager, I was allowed to drink. Now, I certainly drank a lot of beer when I wasn't supposed to be drinking beer when I was in high school. But we see, and this isn't mentioned in this particular article, but when we're talking about European countries, another good example, we talk about the health issue with the drunk driving fatalities as an argument for keeping the drinking age at 21. But in places like France, where I spent a lot of time, things like binge drinking are just not as common in Europe. And it's very common when you go to parties in homes where the parents are there, the whole family's there, and the kids are enjoying wine. And it's just not taboo. It's not mysterious. So there's not that push to binge drink like we see on college campuses and these things. And I just think in the right setting, say if you're with your family or with adult supervision, that, you know, having a glass or two of wine with a meal, it's cultural and it's enjoyable and it's not dangerous. It allows an opportunity also in those settings to teach responsibility in handling alcohol. And I think that that's where we kind of come off the rails a little bit here in this country. I'm sure plenty of you out there disagree with me on this, but I also do buy into the argument. If you can be drafted, if there's a draft on, or you can join the military and die serving your country and you can't buy a beer, that seems a little bit strange to me. Like I said, the article doesn't seem to think it's going to go anywhere in New Hampshire. It probably won't. But I think it's something to think about and something to continue to have a dialogue about. Just wanted to share my thoughts with you on that, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the show. When we come back, we are going to do show here. It's radio, right? We're going to hear it. Our coverage of the Speed Rack event from Monday there at the Howlin' Wolf, a great event to benefit breast cancer awareness and research, and all in the name of fun, an all-female bartender competition. So stay tuned for those interviews. Interesting stuff, a lot of fun. We're gonna take that break. Come on back. We're gonna
stay here till we soothe our soul. Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe, named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner. The Black Duck features over 120 rums, as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street, or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. And yes, if you were listening at the beginning of the show, and I hope you were, we are here at Speed Rack Howlin' Wolf in New Orleans. First time, I think, that Speed Rack has been here in New Orleans, and yep. I'm pleased to be joined by the organizers, Ivy Mix and Lynette Marrero. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you so much for having us. Here.
Awesome. And so, welcome to New Orleans, first of all.
Thank you. We love this town.
Yeah, I know you've both been here before, so it's not a first-time thing. But first time that Speed Rack's been here, right?
It is, yeah. First time Speed Rack is in New Orleans. We're super excited to finally bring it here. It's been one of our dreams to bring it here for years and years, and this year finally worked out, and it's awesome. The crowd's here. The competitors are amazing. We're really excited to be here.
It's a great event that y'all put on, and for listeners on the show, it's Monday afternoon, and we got a good turnout, but this is
well,
New Orleans.
You know, I was going to say, if there's any place you can throw a little interruption in the late afternoon, it's New Orleans.
Happy hour
starts earlier, but we're really excited. Today is actually our Southeast regional competition. We are on our fourth event of our 8-city national tour, which we do in the U.S., and we had ladies show up here from as far as Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky, Nashville, all over Florida, Texas, and then a lot of ladies from this hometown, which was really awesome to see.
Yeah, well represented in these rounds. So how does it work, Ivy? Do the people, like the winner from here, move on to a national level competition?
Exactly. So this is kind of, imagine like the very big, so we're almost the Super Bowl season, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of the same thing. Like you kind of put your name in the hat to compete. We had 25 women show up here today. We had a preliminary round. Only 8 made it on stage. From this 8, 1 will win. And the one that wins today is bracketed style. So we do the preliminary round to seed the ladies, basically. You have 25th fastest and then the first fastest, you know?
Right. Okay.
And only the 8th fastest make it to the playoffs, let's say. And the playoffs are up on stage.
And you seeded them coming in based on their times from
the
preliminary?
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Cool. Okay. Exactly. So one first goes against 8th, second against 7th, and so on. So today, whoever wins after they go through the whole quarterfinals, semifinals, finals is going to be Miss Speed Rec Southeast. And they get to come and compete in the finals in Chicago on May 8th.
Oh, that's exciting.
And we also do something that we get a wild card winner. So if you made the top 8 today but you didn't win, we are going to open it up to voting. So tomorrow through Thursday or through Friday, you can go in and vote on your favorite competitor, and then she too, if she gets the most votes and the judges pick, she will get to go and compete in the finals as well.
Oh, that's cool. Now where do people go vote?
They can vote on our Facebook page.
Okay.
There's a direct link from there. And yeah, it's going to be really awesome. We have so far you know, I've crossed this country. We're in New York. We were in Chicago, who is hosting the national finals for the first time this year. We did Seattle and San Francisco. So up next is Phoenix for our Southwest.
Okay.
And then we hit the Northeast with Boston and then D.C. in March. And it's really exciting. We're really happy to see so many new competitors. You know, there's some veterans who are competing here tonight, but there's a whole host of women who are first-timers. And that's really great to see that their passion, their dedication, the amount of practice going through. You can watch the women this morning kind of with headphones on, shadow boxing almost their cocktails, and it was really cool to see that. But we also had a bunch of events yesterday with all the ladies to kind of build up the sisterhood of our community. And what was really amazing was that the New Orleans ladies, when they knew they were hosting, reached out to us very early and wanted to make sure that there was a nice impact for the community. So yesterday we got to sit down with all men and women from all over the community here in New Orleans and abroad who came in to see it, to actually have some conversations about issues that affect our industry, such as mental health, you know, and just kind of coping techniques as we deal with, you know, with hospitality. So it's been a really great day. Great
quality of life stuff with
absolutely
life balance,
the great myth.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's great. So, how did y'all get started doing this? What was the impetus to make? How did you come up with the idea?
Sure. So it was it was going on 8 years ago, and there was something called the Manhattan Cocktail Classic that was going on in Manhattan. It was kind of like Tales in Manhattan, and the industry was kind of at the peak of its blowing up moment, you know. But in New York City, like the epicenter of cocktails was in the East Village. That's where Astor Center was, and all this stuff was going on. Lynette still is president of something called LUPEC, which is Ladies United for the Preservation of Endangered Cocktails. Alba Huerta is the president in Houston. It's an awesome sorority of sorts across the country for women who love cocktails. Anyway, so the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, and ladies from LUPEC across the country were running the kitchen, almost like the caps do for Tales of the Cocktail.
Sure, okay.
But it was all LUPEC doing that. And I was walking around, and someone was like, "Hey, Ivy, can you do this thing? It's a thing for cocktails, and we just need to videotape you doing this stuff because we don't have any women." And that's kind of like, that's kind of weird because I'm in a basement full of women. Like, what are you talking about? We're batching a ton of drinks. It's kind of strange. And no one knew me from Adam at that point. Like, it's not like I had a name in the industry. I was just literally a woman, and that was like my only like, thing. And I was like, that's kind of messed up. Fast forward a little while, I was like, oh, it'd be cool to do a cocktail competition for women. And Lynette was doing a lot of stuff at the time, doing events and charging entry fees or asking for donations, but donating 100% to charity. And I was like, that's awesome, because we can get it sponsored. Sorry, I'm a bartender, I swear.
That's all right, we can be better.
Okay.
We're all good. It's not live.
But we can get this sponsored, and our amazing sponsors make it possible to get 100% donated to charity. So we sat down next to each other at the Super Bowl 7 years ago by chance, and I was like, "Hey, I had this idea. I think I want to call Speed Rackets for ladies. You're a boozy feminist. I'm a boozy feminist. Let's chat." And Lynette actually, you know, she's my work wife and I love her to death, has a lot of capability of getting stuff done. So we met that next week. We had our first event 4 or 5 months later. Now we're 7 years later. We've done over 100 events, or almost 100 events.
Yeah. Wow.
We're probably almost, not over 100. We're probably at like 80-something. And we've raised almost $700,000 for breast cancer, and we've had over 1,000 women compete. And it's really amazing that where we've come from where we started. Like, it's now more than ever, we need this sisterhood. People are finally becoming aware of what's happening to women in our world, and I feel like if we can lead as an example in our tiny industry, then maybe we can make a difference. And I'm really proud that Lynette and I got together and are able to contribute in some tiny way, you know?
It's fantastic, and I think one of the things we know, I mean, you both know this really well working in the industry, is that bars are places for community to come together.
Yes.
Right, and so for an opportunity to exchange ideas and make sure that women are well represented in the industry and that women are treated properly in the industry
Absolutely.
Is incredibly important.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's been really, really showed. I think what's great is that you see, you know, the best guy bartenders show up here today to bar back for the ladies, to help them prepare. There was tons of training. Lots of people offered bars for the ladies to get together. And I think that's what it's about. And it was really great, you know, even just talking to the ladies yesterday, even when they were training to compete against each other, they were working together as a team to improve their stats, to improve their skill sets. And I think that's really nice. And everyone's working together to increase something. So
it's great. You know what? I actually had the nice privilege of, I went to the practice round that some of the women here did at Cane and Table on Wednesday.
Sure.
And the level of craftsmanship, the level of professionalism, the passion that everybody from New Orleans is putting into this was really cool to see.
Absolutely. I mean, it's pretty great. They were super excited. And you know, I think what's nice is to kind of shine a spotlight on New Orleans at a different time of year. You know, this community is more than just, you know, one event that happens at one time of the year. And so to have, like, everyone be a little bit more at this point, you know, not so tired running around like crazy, was really nice to see more people enjoy. And we got to attend the, you know, the parade on Saturday and just get a bit more what the culture is all about
you
here.
You went to Crew de Vue on Saturday?
We went to Crew de Vue. Awesome. And it was pretty great to see your community pretty much say, time's up, we're not going to take this anymore, and be on guard, because the powerful, what used to be the minority, are going to speak out and say, you need to respect everyone in this industry, and you need to you know, make sure that people are looking after each other, and that's what this community is all about, which is pretty great.
Awesome. And I know you all have to get back up to the stage. You got about 30 seconds left. Can you tell people where they can find you online, the website and Facebook?
Yeah,
and
so we're at www.speed-rack.com. It's Speed Rack Facebook page. Check us out tomorrow. All of our events are up at speed-rack.com. We are launching our European and international season in February with some regionals in Canada.
Awesome.
And then in May, we'll be doing Canada National Finals. In June, we'll be doing the UK National Finals. And then we're launching in Australia for the first time in late July, early August.
Fantastic. Great work, and congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming to see us in New Orleans. We
appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Friends, Ivy and Lynette from Speed Rack, they got to get back on stage because we're about to go into the semifinals.
Awesome. Exactly. Awesome.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Who dat? We're going to take a little break on the show, friends. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music, Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Oh, well, I'm sitting here la-la waiting for my ya-ya.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Yeah, Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thank you for tuning in. As you know, we are here at Speed Rack. We just chatted with Ivy and Lynette, who organized the event, and I'm super honored to be chatting with the two finalists that just totally destroyed the whole thing and just kicked ass. I can say that on the radio. Madeline Kay, congratulations.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Anna Giordano, congratulations.
Thank you, Brian.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And, you know, you guys came down, so went through the whole process of elimination, did the whole thing, and then you two came down to the final, and it was like neck and neck. It was amazing.
That was pretty gnarly.
It was so close.
Yeah.
it was really close. So what were y'all thinking? I mean, I hate to ask, like, stupid questions like this, but when it was coming down to what were you thinking? Like, how was that going? Were you still, like, just boom, boom, boom on it? How'd you feel, Madeline, when it was coming down to the end?
I mean, honestly, I wasn't really ready. I was too focused on my wild cards. I didn't have anything set, so I was kind of freaking out a little bit. Thankfully, this is, like, my fifth speed rack, so I kind of just pulled it together. I really thought that you had it. I didn't think
that's
I had it.
That's the thing. Every so time, close. I'm like, that other girl totally had it. There's a whole, like, since 11 o'clock this morning, I'm like, everyone else has it so much more down than I do right now.
This has definitely been one of the closer speed racks I've
That's
I've
what
been
I've heard,
at.
Too.
And I've been cool. at a lot.
Have you done, Anna, is this your first one?
No, it's my first time.
Is it really?
Amazing.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Wow.
Girl.
Yo.
Killed it. I did not know that.
Oh, I practiced with a bunch of badass ladies.
That's amazing.
I can say that? Okay, cool. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
I practiced with a bunch of badass ladies here, like all like Maggie, Adrian, you know, Lucy, everybody, like they've done this before, and so they gave me tons of pointers and it was really helpful.
Amazing.
Yeah, and you guys have such a solid community.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That's something I've noticed since I got here yesterday is like the community here is so tight. It's amazing.
Speedrec has helped. We haven't not like we've been hanging out like 5 days out of the week for the past 3 weeks.
That's
like,
incredible.
We've been chilling. Yeah.
That's what Speedrec's all about. It's like bringing us all together. That's why I love this organization so much.
Tell us where you're from and where you work.
So I'm from Austin.
Yep.
I am not working at the moment. I'm about to do a cross-country move to Chicago.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just prepping
hey,
for
this
that.
Is perfect.
I know, right?
driving due north.
I
just
am.
Just drive due north, right
yes.
on.
Yes. So yeah, that's what my main speed rack, getting through speed rack was my main focus, and now I actually get to start packing and things. So.
How long have you worked in the bar industry, Madeline?
Oh, goodness. 9 years?
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And Anna, you work at Bar Tonique.
I work at Bar Tonique. I've been there for about a year. Yeah, fantastic bar.
And how long have you been in the bar industry?
I got to say, how long have I been here? Like, I've been 3.5 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So
when, had some good teachers.
Like you said, it's a great community around here. And I'm sure it's a great community in Austin. I'm not that
it
familiar.
Is, yeah.
But, yeah, that's fantastic. The support that we saw here today from both the folks in New Orleans and then the folks from Texas. A lot of flag waving. You got your flag right here, Madeline.
So many flags.
It was great to see the turnout and the support. And it's, yeah. So tell us a little bit about the community in Austin, Madeline.
The community in Austin is also super tight. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it other than, like, we've got a lot of really good people. I mean, obviously, like, it's like an 8-hour drive from Austin.
Yeah,
we've got,
right.
But it's not even Austin. We've got people from Houston, from San Antonio, I met a guy from Laredo who's here just to support Texas Girls.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a far drive.
That is a far drive.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, going through the competition, and we'll talk about this at the top of the show. People have already heard this, and we kind of run down how it works. So when you get to the final round, right, so... The bar keeps getting raised. It's not just the speed part, it's the presentation part. And so tell us, like, Anna, tell us with the wild card thing,
How did that work?
Yeah, I'm messed up. I'm a wild card garnish that screwed me. but it was super fun though, because I mean, you've been to Bartonique. A lot of people go and they're like, oh my god, a cocktail bar, make me something,
yes.
Something nice. So that was like kind of, I felt kind of comfortable with that. But yeah, like on the spot, like you have to be so quick about it, way harder. And like asking people for modifiers when you can't just look at something and be like, oh, that would taste great in that.
Yeah.
It's just you have to like think really on top of your head.
One of the challenges that I didn't realize this because this is the first time I've actually been to a speed rack as well, Madeline, is that when I didn't realize the judges get to call out a preference to make a drink. And that's got to be tough too, right, just to keep that straight.
It can be, yeah.
I think it's helpful.
Well, it is helpful for sure. But if you have like... like a certain spec in your head that you're just making over and over, and then all of a sudden somebody wants something weird.
Yeah. Like
that's happened
like
before.
A bourbon suffering bastard.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, like a bourbon suffering bastard. Yeah, exactly. People just like to say a bastard, so I knew that that drink was going to be in there, it seemed like. So when you go through the process and you practice, and I know I didn't see you practice, Anna, and obviously I didn't see you practice, Madeline.
You didn't see me practicing?
No, because I was only at the one practice at Cannon Table Wednesday, and you weren't there. How do you go about visualizing the whole thing?
I just practice our preliminary cocktails and then just kind of hope that would carry over if I got into the top eight,
The speed. I can't believe that you only practiced prelims, and this is your first year, and you made it so far.
Thanks.
You should be super proud.
I hear that. That's making me feel good. Yeah, thanks.
That's dope.
That's awesome. Thank you.
It's absolutely amazing. And so now, Madeline, you're off to Chicago.
I am.
What are the finals? Do we know when the finals are?
May 5th, I believe.
May 5th?
Oh, nice. Yeah. Awesome. Tons of time.
A little Cinco de Mayo.
There you
ouchie.
Go.
Agave will be affluent.
Let's hope we don't go too cliche with the agave on Cinco de Mayo, but that's all right. And there's still an opportunity, of course, friends, to get on the Speed Rack Facebook page and vote a wild card. I'm going to endorse our good...
Hook it up,
Anna
as you
Giordano.
Should.
Hook it up, y'all.
Absolutely.
Also Care, because I love Care, because she's from Austin, too.
That's also true.
Fair enough.
And I trained her, and she's my little baby.
Right on. And are y'all going to go to the after party at Santos?
Oh, absolutely. Why not? Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool.
See our compatriots and little dresses fumbling, trying to make cocktails fast.
Yeah, you know what? Since you brought it up, let me ask you this question. How was the quality of the bar backing today? I mean, some of those guys,
I had Ryan.
Yeah, right.
That was amazing.
Okay, and how about you, Madeline? How'd you feel about
it? Yeah, we had some really solid bar backs.
Okay.
I was really impressed considering this is the first time Speed Rack has been in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, in Chicago, those boys have been volunteering for Speed Rack for 7 years now.
Okay. Right.
They know the game. For these guys to come in and not necessarily know how Speed Rack works, because it's different than normal bar backing, they did such a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, they have investments in the community, too. Like, we're all buddies, so they were trying to look out. Yeah. It was nice.
Absolutely. And I mean, and they're reasonably-looking guys, so...
That was also nice.
Yeah, it was nice. So, you know, one thing, and we talked about this briefly in the previous segment with Ivy and Lynette, but this is all for a great cause, and it's for a great charity. So tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, you know, come down to it, yeah. When I was like, hey, friends, come see me do this contest, not because I want you to see me bartend really fast, but because it's for a really good cause, so... Just
Absolutely.
Come. Just shut up and just pay money and come.
Yeah, it's not often enough that competitions are for causes like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not how they're all set up, which is fine. But that's why Speed Rack is my absolute favorite event every year. Because not only is it an incredible opportunity to meet amazing women all across the country, but you get to raise money for something that affects all of us. Like, I can't think of anybody who hasn't, like, been 6 degrees separation away from breast cancer.
Absolutely.
Two degrees. For sure. Yeah. It's great.
It's neat. And the sense of community, I one of the neatest parts about the event, and you both touched on this, the sense of community that we get both locally, you know, like your folks from Texas, Madeline, our folks here from New Orleans, Anna, but the camaraderie across the board, the sportswomanship, I'm going to say, it was fantastic. And so much respect for both of you. You guys did a great job, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So
very fun.
thank you so much for taking time out. I know you want to go like get to the after party, and I know like coming off the high of the whole thing.
I know. I just want to smoke a cigarette and eat a cheeseburger. To be very brutally honest.
Fair enough. Thanks, buddy. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming on the show, Anna Giordano and Madeline. Okay, congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck in Chicago with the move and the whole thing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You might as well just go up there, right? You're just going to go up there and move and be there for the whole final.
Yeah, screw it. I'll just pack all my stuff next week. No place to live.
It's like a one-way trip north. Congratulations. Thank you so much for being here. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Brian is here at the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Come on back.
Now ain't that a shame? I'm leaving here today. Yes, I'm...
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
The green room is smoking and the flowers are burning down. Throw my baby out the window and let those guns burn down. All because it's kind of a time. Oh, it's kind of a time.
Oh, well, all right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks, as always, friends, for listening this week, and I hope you listen every week. You can catch the show not only here on 990 AM on the radio Thursdays from 3 to 5 p.m. here in New Orleans, but anywhere on the planet, I guess, with an internet connection, you can get the podcast. It's on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Tune in or just check out noladrinks.com. We're always happy to have you check out our Facebook page and all that good stuff as well. If there's a story idea you'd like to hear us talk about, you know, shoot us a note over there on Facebook. That's just Nola Drinks. That's also us on Instagram, and we're Nola Drinks 1 on Twitter. So connect with us that way. Yeah, friends. So I hope you did enjoy those interviews with Speed Rack. Once again, want to give a shout out and mad props to all the women on Team New Orleans, as well as to the event organizers. So many people from the hospitality industry, specifically many folks from the bar industry and other connected alcohol industry, volunteered to put on the event. It was a really well-run event. It was a lot of fun, really positive, just a really good thing. The talent that all of the women in the competition showed was remarkable. And just that challenge where you're sort of handed, okay, here's a set of, I think it's like 80 drinks that they might be given, and then there are four that you're told to make, and then your time to do, how that works. And then, you know, as I said, each round earlier in the show, I said this, as each round progresses, the quality of the drink actually has to increase. So it's not just making the drink fairly right and fairly fast. It's, you know, did you do the right garnish? Some of the judges can throw out what their personal preference is for a particular drink. You know, salt on the rim or not salt on the rim on a margarita. Huge argument. Vu Carré up or on the rocks. We've talked about that on the show before. Not going down that road. Up is the answer. But anyway, so it was really neat, and it was a super fun thing, and a lot of great talent on display. And again, our good friend Anna Giordano, who was the runner-up, if you're listening on the radio, you can still go to the Speed Rack Facebook page and vote her to go as the wild card to the final in Chicago and compete there against the finalists. So again, go vote for Anna Giordano. I'm going to give you that little shout-out. If you're here on the radio, if you're hearing this on Friday, I think it's too late. But friends, hey, wanted to mention some what's going on this weekend, as I said earlier, besides Carnival. Oh yeah, the Super Bowl.
That's probably the biggest holiday in the United States, isn't it? Okay, maybe not. But, you know, actually, strangely enough, there have been calls over the years to make this a three-day weekend. One of the arguments is that there is a marked decline in productivity at work on the Monday following the Super Bowl. Yeah, that happens. How many people? Let's see. 111.9 million people watched the Super Bowl in 2017. That was the third largest of all the Super Bowls. The number's been pretty consistent, right? You know, a bit over 110 million for the past several years. Now, I have heard people say that, like, it's the largest watched sporting event in the world. It's not even actually close to being true. For example, the 2014 World Cup, in total, all the games reached 3.2 billion people, and actually about 1 billion people, so, you know, just shy or so, nine times that of watching the Super Bowl, 1 billion people watch the final. Other events that people watch in much larger numbers, the UEFA final, soccer over there in Europe, also the FA Cup, another one over there in Europe. The Cricket World Cup brings in about 1 billion viewers. The opening ceremony of the Olympics is estimated last time around to have about a billion viewers as well. So there you go. A lot of other things in the world, you know, it's American football, and obviously it has some popularity in other countries, but, you know, things like soccer and cricket, not quite in the same class that way. But here's some interesting stuff. There is an expectation that 1.35 billion chicken wings, that's right, 1.35 billion chicken wings will be consumed this weekend, obviously largely connected to the Super Bowl. That's representative of about a 1.5% increase. This is coming from the National Chicken Council. Their numbers, that is an astronomical number. Many pizza delivery businesses see their orders double. 60% of the food consumed on the Super Bowl is takeout. So about 20, and I don't have a number of the number of pizzas, I apologize, but roughly 28 million pounds of chips are consumed. 8 million pounds of guacamole are consumed. So some of the funny facts here, if you will, from the National Chicken Council regarding the wings. If 1.35 billion, excuse me, wings were laid end to end along Interstate 95, which is, you know, that's a long, of course, interstate that runs up and down the East Coast, and it does connect Philadelphia to Foxborough, Mass, more or less there in New England. If you laid 1.35 billion chicken wings end to end, they would stretch from Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass, almost 250 times. Okay, get your head around that. That is enough wings to put 625 wings on every seat in all 32 NFL stadiums. 1.35 billion wings is enough to circle the earth three times. That's 394 million feet of chicken wings. Okay. That is enough that a chicken could cross the road 13 million times, as they said. Americans will eat 20 million more wings this year. That's that 1.5% increase. And as they say, if wings were dollars, that would only buy us 2 minutes of commercial time in the big game. Okay. Interesting stuff there. Lots of chicken. Other numbers, estimates of spend on potato chips, $277 million. Separated out from that is tortilla chips, $225 million. Meat snacks, I'm guessing that's like beef jerky and stuff like that, $99 million. Popcorn, $89 million. Deli salads, $80 million. Cheese snacks, $71 million. Deli sandwiches, $58 million. Salty snack dips, $42 million. Deli platters, $23 million. And vegetable trays, $13 million on that stuff. And they all said these were all from Nielsen from 2017. They also estimated that 1.2 billion would be spent on beer, 594 million on wine, and 503 million on hard liquor. Friends, we're talking about a lot of food, a lot of booze, and a lot of money. Yeah, and, you know, and more people, it's kind of interesting. And here's one other interesting fact. It is more food is consumed in the United States on Super Bowl Sunday than any other day besides Thanksgiving. So there's another thing to think about. When we think about the gluttony that we are here in the United States, that we demonstrate on Thanksgiving, and Super Bowl Sunday is number two, wow. And I always think that always kind of makes me laugh, because we're juxtaposing that against, you know, the two best football teams and this athletic showcase that's going on. And yeah, we're just sitting on our couches and eating and drinking. I got no problem with that, because, you know, even though I could care less about the New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles, that's probably what I'm going to be doing. And there's also been more of a trend. I don't have these numbers, but more of a trend out there more and more people are actually watching the game at home, and that has been chalked up to saving money. Then say like going out to sports bars, for example, that has been chalked up to saving money, and that has also been chalked up to the increased size of screens. And hey, man, I'd rather sit on my couch and watch the big screen, flat screen here. But here are some interesting numbers out of Money Magazine as well, talking about different prices for the Super Bowl. For the budget-minded, the least expensive seat as of January 22nd, those are probably gone now, was $3,000 on StubHub. If you spent that, then $98 for an average rally bus to the game there in Minneapolis, and then $35, which I don't know how you can go to the Super Bowl and only spend $35 on food and drink. You're talking about $3,133. If you're the weekender, their estimate was just over $6,600. So a seat there in the upper end zone area at nearly $5,000, $283 average round trip price to Minneapolis. I'm also thinking that's pretty hard to find on Super Bowl weekend. Two nights stay, $1,200. Some of the game day food, drinks, average cost for the rest of the weekend, they're saying, hey, about $6,600. And then if you're the big fat daddy, Mac Daddy spender, you can do the Delta Sky Club Super Bowl seat on StubHub, going for $20,000. Again, same airfare. They were talking about $283, $10,500 for a three-night stay at the Super Bowl suite on booking.com in Minneapolis. They don't give the name of the hotel, but something $340 for a luxury car rental. Don't have to pay for parking, because if you have that super expensive ticket for $20,000, yeah, they give you free parking. Isn't that cool? Real nice of them. So $0 for parking, $720 for VIP tickets to the Leather and Laces party on Friday night, which features Donnie Wahlberg, Jenny McCarthy, and Flo Rida. Okay, kind of the only one I would even care to see is Flo Rida, but $720 for VIP tickets to that. And then this is per person, of course. And then $133 average cost of dining for the rest of the weekend. That's their estimate. What's that spend? Just shy of $32,000, friends, for the Super Bowl. I will watch the game on my couch, and I will consume good food and good drink here in the comfort of my own home. That's the plan. Friends, I hope everyone have an enjoyable Super Bowl Sunday, if that's what you choose to do. Have a great carnival. Here we go this weekend. Get out there. Get it done. Have some fun. And we'll talk more next week. We have Chris Hanna and Paul Gussing coming back on the show to talk about Mardi Gras cocktails. And we'll talk a lot more about Mardi Gras, because then we're going to be really in the thick of it. So get out there, have some fun, check out some of the parades, support the local bands and everybody else that's out there doing all kinds of good stuff. So friends, have a great weekend. Happy carnival. Be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all.